So welcome everybody. I'm recording now and my name's Daniel Four. You got that. If you want more on what I'm doing, it's ancestralmedicine.org. And the intent tonight, I called the talk Practices for Navigating a Trump Presidency, which is a little bit depressing even as a title to me. And my hope in our time is to lay out what for me feels like some fundamental principles or practices or approaches to the sacred that might be especially important to keep in mind as we head into who knows what, but so far as any objective-minded person could tell, we're heading into something that looks like worsening policies for human rights, social justice, earth well-being, income equality, and generally for progressive-minded people, it's a little bleak right now by any measure of things. And so, of course, that reverberates in our personal lives, some more than others, obviously. Some people are the already unsafe, unwelcome struggle of being in this country, whether you've been here for a long time or recently, probably just got a bit less welcoming. And so how do we roll with that as ritual-minded, spiritual-oriented people in a general way? That's what I want to try to speak to a little bit. And let me say that it's not my intention to presume to know what everybody needs. Not at all. I'm going to put out what to me feel like guiding principles. And what I want to do is invite each of you while you're listening, and then we'll have a little bit of time for chat or dialogue toward the end of the hour. I'm going to talk about six key principles that are foundational for me or feel important to me. And I want you to notice, do you feel shaky on that? Do you feel strong on that, kind of in between? And then do you have any objections or things that don't sit well with you about it? Because that's also interesting for the dialogue as well. So the first, let me go ahead and post in the chat these six, because otherwise the learning, remembering brain will be distracted. So I'm going to post it in the chat here and then talk through it. And these are just short footnote kind of things for me to remember. Come on now. Okay, there it is. So the first of the six is, it's more important than ever when things are challenging, when things are a little destabilized, to get real clear about where you personally need to be. It's a really key principle in any indigenous earth-honoring tradition that I've had the good fortune to learn with, that we each have our own unique destiny. We say in Yoruba Ifa tradition, you have your own Ori, and your Ori demands certain things of you, or you have things that are good for you, not good for you. And so if you're doing something, even if it seems totally necessary, that's not in your path and in your karma to do, it's going to suck for you. It's not going to go well. You're not going to be that helpful, and you're not going to be that happy doing it. And so if it's your path to be a really excellent body worker, then awesome. Do that. If it's your path to write, if it's your path to get a bus full of supplies and roll out to Standing Rock and show up with humility and help out, then do that. And don't be a jerk to people who don't do that. I've seen a lot of this in the sort of shock, grief, anger, powerlessness, collective barf on social media in the last month of people I think partly from a sense of powerlessness and frustration, policing others in a way that implies that everybody ought to be feeling or responding in the same way. And that's not helpful. It's not constructive. And so around this first topic of get clear about your personal destiny and path, an imbalance expression would look like you know where you need to be and you can call in as much power and backing and vitality for that as you can access to do exactly that in an awesome way, period. An out of balance expression would look a lot like being in reaction, being in groupthink, being influenced by others who you who happen to show up on your Facebook feed or you happen to be hanging out with socially, and being kind of grouchy and negative and getting lost in what you think you ought to be doing. It sucks emotionally. It's not good for the soul either. And so there's not just one way to respond to a worsening political situation besides get clear about where you need to be. And practices that can support this focus can include meditation, slowing down, introspection, which is not avoidance when things are difficult necessarily, because if you show up from a erratic or discombobulated place, you're likely to make things worse. And so dropping in, getting clear where you need to be, that's not necessarily selfish or disconnected. So first thing, get clear on your personal destiny and your personal coordinates day to day. That looks also like, oh, there's an event happening. Is it good medicine for me to be there? Let me drop in and really feel into that. Oh, it's not. Can I honor that and stay home and veg out if I need to for the day? It's okay. So that. Another kind of practice, if you feel weak on this point, is to take yourself even more seriously. We're going to be dead soon, like hopefully not too soon, but we don't know when it's coming. And so take your life seriously and not for granted. So if you know you need to do more training, go do that. If you know you need to, you know, be pursuing something, then do that, right? Okay. Second point I want to highlight is about the role of the ancestors and ancestral connection. Holy shit. I tend to see a lot of what's happening right now culturally, whether it's around racism, sexism, homophobia, class imbalance, income inequality, colonialist mindset, disconnection from the earth, whatever your particular flavor of cultural dysfunction that for anyone noticing is really flagrant right now. And those things are intergenerational. They obviously did not come out of nowhere. They're not going to be all healed up in our lifetimes. And it's relevant to see the way that our own ancestors have both participated in those troubles and transmitted to us unresolved pain from those troubles, and to seek to resolve those unpaid debts and also burdens and toxins that we're down lineage from within our own hearts, within our own lives and families. That's work that requires a bit of slowness and diligence. It's a kind of structurally yin introspective integrative work, and it's a good antidote for the freneticness of the energy that sometimes is present with activism and things in that vein. And if we can heal up the way that the cultural poisons live in us personally, that allows us to be more effective in our service in the world, whatever form that takes. And it really does, at the risk of sounding kind of dorky, raise our vibration or raise the collective vibration to have our own ancestral lineages be in a better condition and to resolve as much as we can internally, personally, some of the toxicity around racism, sexism, etc. And because those are inherited poisons. They're intergenerational, and they're working with the ancestors allows us to leverage change in a more sustainable way. So in balance, this point about ancestral influence looks like feeling the backing of your own people for the service-oriented, social justice-oriented work that you might be inclined to engage in. Out of balance, it looks kind of like avoiding your own personal story and getting slowly eaten alive by ghosts and showing up as a kind of annoying, off-putting person who might have the technically correct political views but can't navigate a relationship to save your life. And so if that's your condition, there's an invitation to actually sink into your inner work. And, you know, when people of, I'm generalizing here, but when people of, let's say, African or Native ancestry are finding white people off-putting, one of the things that will sometimes get said is something to the effect of, go handle your own ancestors, go handle your own shit and your own story. Don't come like being neurotic and weird around us. Handle yourself first. And it can be jarring to get that advice if you're the one receiving it, but it's good advice, actually. And what the message there is work out the cultural toxins that we would try to address through activism only by working them out in our own bloodlines, in our own families, and in our own heart as our ancestors live within us. Because if we have self-hatred, and if we have this, I'm a loser because I'm white, or I'm a loser because I'm a guy, or whatever, view, it's actually not very helpful. It's kind of a stuck, it's a egotism. It's like a reverse egotism that leads to stuckness and low self-esteem, which doesn't allow us to really get much done. And so practices, if you notice that you're weak on this ancestral piece, can include direct ancestral reverence, ritual, healing work, also family research, possibly family therapy, but also working out in any kind of emotional, psychological healing way, your own stuff with your family. It's really sacred work. And it's important that we're settling in for the multi-generational approach. And when we work that stuff out, it reverberates in a good way beyond just our lifetime even. So, yeah. So the ancestral piece. Oh, wow. There's a lot of people on the call. Hey, welcome. Great. Let me keep chatting through these 6 points. And again, the invitation, if you just joined the call, is to notice, where are you strong on this? Are you strong on this point? Or are you weak on it? And anything that's not clear about it, because we're going to head into discussion in a little bit here. The third point is about connection with the earth and with the land. And that can be harder if you're in a big city, like a lot of folks are, but not impossible. And what to say about this? I think the opposite of connection with the land would be really checking Facebook all day and not getting out of your human culture bubble. And when we can get out, drop in with a local river, mountain, even just the trees in an urban neighborhood, whatever it is, they have their own perspective. They have their own story about things. So ask the local sweet gum growing through the sidewalk in an urban area, how do you feel about the election? Or what is the perspective of these other, like thousands and thousands of other modes of consciousness, whether it's plants, animals, spirits of the natural world, stones, elemental beings, etc. When we lose relationship with them, we're living from a colonized kind of consciousness, from a domesticated, cutoff, colonized awareness, where we only are valuing other living humans, and not even all of them, because we tend to struggle with that too. But the thing about getting out, even if it seems selfish, even if it seems difficult, there's a cleansing that's possible from the heavy, the Indians, some of the Caro people call it hucha, like heavy survival energy. So cleansing that kind of survival energy off of your being can allow you to be more sustainable and effective in the work you're doing, the service work. And it also, if you want to be activist-y about it, so to speak, or also bring in the element of social justice, then part of that's getting to know the land where you live, getting to know the history of that land. Most places, everywhere in the United States is traditional Native North American territory in some way. And getting to know the history of pain and sorrow and heartache on the land, and also there are thousands of other beings who are happy for us to be in relationship with them. And so that's a source of resource and renewal. Even if your human community is being shits to you, that you can still go out and be held by the earth and to draw power from that. The folks holding down Standing Rock, for example, I have no doubt that they are clear, at least the elders, most of them, about why they're there. They're good with their own ancestors, and they feel the backing of their ancestors, and they feel the backing of the land for what they're doing. There's nothing more magical about that area of land than where you're at right now. And so do you feel the backing of the land beneath you where you're at? If not, that's something you can cultivate on purpose. And one of the main practices is just getting out. Another is caring for your body well on a basic animal level, eating well, tending to your diet, and getting to know the creatures of your local area, to know that that is subversive in its own way, to affirm the specific intimacy of your relationships with the local beings in a time when a lot of people are freaking out or misbehaving and causing a lot of damage, to still remember all those other relationships. So yeah, the connection with the land. Another practice for that, and it's one a lot of people already work with, is using different plant medicines as a way of communing and connecting with the actual spirits of those plants. And to remember that our relational network that we can draw a resource and recharge from is not just human. A fourth piece that feels important to name is, and I don't know the best wording for all this, so I'm gonna say shadow work. And I could also say, don't be a righteous asshole. And it's a way of saying, like, look, for me, the guiding teaching here, if we're going to reference it to spiritual traditions, is Bodhisattva ideal or Bodhisattva precepts from Mahayana and Zen Buddhism. And the sense here is, for one, we're in it for the long, long, long term, like many, many lifetimes. The effect of a Trump presidency is, I can't tell. We don't know where it's headed, but it's probably going to suck for more than 4 years. And it probably won't be super noticeable in 45,000 years. And so there's a long-term view that can be relevant to hold. And the other thing about Bodhisattva ethic or spirit is that we're accountable also to the most bigoted, noxious Trump voter, let's say. Not to generalize about millions of people, but and in that accountability, that doesn't mean that it's good medicine for us to choose to relate with those individuals. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily safe. I'm not saying don't observe basic safety, but I'm saying that if we dehumanize and objectify people who are in a more stuck and less healthy frame of consciousness, it's not actually that useful in the long term, because we still have to deal with one another. We still have to, in some way, in a bigger sense, work it out with one another. And again, that's not minimizing the very real threat to safety and well-being for many people, many of whom are less white or less male, etc. And so when I say shadow work, part of what I'm saying is, like, notice if you tend to get in a place of righteous othering and dehumanizing and generalizing about whole groups of people. There's and it's not that there isn't a place for that too, but bitch and vent privately with people you love don't necessarily call that useful publicly as your public facing service. And so one of the practices with shadow work, I guess, in the context of this conversation, is be open to understanding what's actually effective and what is just an expression of righteous and justified anger. Because just blasting people is not necessarily an effective strategy, although it may be really important to vent personally. And what to say, what would be a practice if you notice that this pattern is something you struggle with? A practice would be, good therapy doesn't hurt if you're into therapy or things like it, emotional healing, etc. But there's an ethic that for me is really inspiring, meaningful, that comes from animist traditions more generally, of seeing things on a spectrum from objectifying to, I don't know if you say subjectifying, or being more relationally oriented. And so when I am around, for me, a trigger is Christians. I struggle to not have a shitty attitude toward Christians, even though it's a totally big generalization that doesn't fit all Christians. And so it's one of my edges where I have to watch that I don't get into objectifying others. And so holding that value that even if you're going to disagree with someone, you're still going to see them as a family member. They're still your, you know, father, mother, sister, brother, relative that you are accountable to on a sacred level at the end of the day. And if that accountability looks like, respectfully, I need to walk away from you, then that's how you do it. Yeah. So there's a piece around shadow work and check in the energy of righteousness. It's not that constructive necessarily. Two other pieces I want to name, then we'll be in dialogue because I know there's a lot of people. I appreciate your perspectives here. The fifth piece is around, and so, you know, we could spend a week on this topic alone, but sacred warriorship and honoring boundaries. It's obviously a time where there's a certain amount of fight and pushback that's going to be needed even more than was already the case because of the impending infringement on all kinds of values that a lot of us hold really sacred. And knowing when to fight and when not to is key. Otherwise, you're just in reaction mode, and you can only fight, and it's not necessarily that effective. And there's a whole, of course, look, some people have been fighters, warriors, in all kinds of ways for decades and decades. And there's a lot of people that are newly waking up to the need for that. And speaking especially to the folks who are just getting that capacity more online, one of the best kinds of training, if you can, excuse me, if you can do it, is some kind of martial art, some kind of body discipline. It actually, on a very visceral level, instructs you about the limitations and the, learning how to lose, learning how to fall, learning when to back up and when to press, and learning how to actually, in a sacred way, in a way that's connected to your spiritual practice and your important relationships, to bring your inner warriorship online. That might look like physical discipline. It might look like writing more openly and more courageously about some aspect of your life that you haven't written about before. But there is an energy of courage and also humility that is needed with the warriorship quality. And to respect that, even if it's not your calling, some people are, because of who they are or how they're choosing to show up, really their basic safety and survival is quite on the line. And to even if it's not your calling to show up at a protest or to put your physical safety on the line, to appreciate and respect those who are and to thank them when appropriate, and to appreciate the gravity of what's happening for a lot of folks. So, you know, I would assume people on this call get that or are doing that. The thing about, what to say about the warriorship piece? I think the most important thing is knowing when to fight and when not to. When it's your moment and when it's not, and how that looks for you to stand up for your values and to be a part of the larger pushback. So And that can look all kinds of ways, and it's not necessarily the way that everybody's going to lead. So I guess what I'm saying is, if it's your call, if it's your moment, then see the sacredness of it. Respect the people that have been doing that longer than you have, and understand there's a whole art and a whole, you know, style of wisdom to being a good activist and a good warrior. Last thing I want to name, and then we'll chat it up some, is about cleansing, renewal, joy, and staying well, and staying really dropped in love with your life. Stepping back from the news when you need to. Stepping back from social media when you need to. To understand when you're getting saturated, vicariously traumatized, or just spun out of touch with your joy and wellness. And to know that taking really excellent care of your heart and your emotional life, making space for your grief, making space for your anger, your fear, is part of, it's a radical act. It's part of having the sustainable long-term angle on everything. There's been a lot of freak out in the last few weeks, myself included. I look at the news, I'm like, oh man, it's going to be as bad as, it's going to be worse maybe than we imagined. Who knows? But prognosis is for some unwellness coming. And what? I can't sustain that state of generalized low-grade freakout for 4 years. That sucks to hang out in that. It's not helpful. And so what I want to suggest is that taking especially good care of yourself and your heart and your relationships that matter, like loving up the children in your life and the, you know, the your family, your close friends, and being really good to the people around you is an excellent form of activism and of participation in getting through what's coming. Because there's going to be most likely things that happen that are really deadly, disempowering, discouraging, directly harmful for a lot of people. And if you're well personally and can help to hold and piece those people back together, if you're not one of them in that moment who are getting rocked by things, that's super useful. And I want to make, you know, for me, one of the things that hits me, like I can get mad and affected and watch the news and just be like, man, this and that, and, you know, and spun out and depressed. But then when I, and it's going to be different for everybody, but for me, one of the things that will hit me is the impending impact on the rest of the natural world. And like, we're still not learning what we need to learn quick enough. And so many beings that, as I see it, are innocent of the kind of human confusion that we're generating, are being deeply harmed by how we're living. And when that's present for me, it's good to not block it. It's good to allow the grief to move through. I'm regulating it a little bit here because I'm supposed to guide a call. But I want to say, like, take super good care of your heart. I think people here already get that, I would assume, but there's a culture at times with activism that can sometimes feel really desperate and urgent and imperative, like it must happen now. And there's a place for that. I don't mean to diminish that, but my sense of it is that it's difficult to sustain that urgency and still have your heart and your relationships be joyful and well. And if you're not in touch with your joy and your like spontaneous happiness, then you've lost already. Like some part of your well-being has been squished by the empire. And it is like you've already become, I wish I had the quote, but it's something to the effect of like fighting the empire in its all of its derangement. If you're not careful, deranges the one fighting it. And so it's way like that. So it's necessary to step back and rotate out. Like, not that I'm a big fan of like Roman armies, but in my mind, I picture like first rank and then like people are getting beat down and they rotate out and next rank rotates in. So there's a like honor the rotation. When you're crunchy and you need to rotate out, you rotate out. And you go cry and whatever you need to do, like recharge. So for me, those are a few key principles. I want to make space for others' perspectives. So I guess my question for you is there anything that I put out in this, you know, just half an hour talking that feels problematic, off-putting, you want to speak to? I think it's best if you type on the chat. If I take everybody off mute, it's going to be madness. And if you type on the chat, then I can take your voice off mute and we can chat for a minute. But I would love to hear from folks about what's helping you right now or what, from what I've shared. Let me take you off mute, Jennifer. Yeah. Great. Go ahead.
Hear me?
Yeah. Speak up a bit if you would.
Okay. Let me know if you have trouble hearing me at all.
That's enough. That's good. Yeah.
Great. So I found, and I was talking with Dave a little bit about this earlier, that I'm struggling a lot with the last one you were talking about, the just being able to hold joy in myself. Letting go of, letting go of grief, letting go of anger, being able to put those things down. And I noticed that there's a part of me that's really resistant to that because I'm afraid of slipping back into complacency.
Yeah, sure. Now, I meant to name that as the out of balance expression of number 6 is being a self-absorbed, obnoxious, bliss ninny, love and light person that, you know, activists want to strangle. And do you really think that's going to happen for you?
Part of it ties into the fact that I'm still angry with myself for not doing more to stop him from getting elected in the first place. That there were a bunch of times in the month leading up to the election where he would do something or say something. Sorry, very enthusiastic dog. He would do something or say something and I would say, that's intolerable. I can't handle that. I need to go. And, you know, I need to go campaign for Hillary. I need to donate money. I need to do everything I can to make sure that he doesn't come into power. And I feel like I let myself down in that a little bit, that I didn't do enough, that I didn't stand up enough, that I trusted America to know better.
Yeah.
And
I think
they clearly didn't. And yeah. I'm afraid of... Yeah, of letting this become normal. I'm afraid of falling back into a place where I accept it as okay.
And you notice that comes into tension with allowing yourself to actually be in a peaceful, content kind of state.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's a tension a lot of people feel. Is there a part of you also, in addition to that, that because of various kinds of privilege feels, I don't know if guilty is the right word, or like almost like you shouldn't be happy or something, or like it's a kind of, is there an element of guilt with it as well?
I'm sure there is some of that going on, at least guilt around not having done more to stop it in the first place. And sort of a renewed sense of I need to work extra hard now to make up for not having done more sooner. And on a logical, practical level, I know that keeping myself in light, keeping myself in positive energy is exactly what I need to be doing. And it's hard to get to that place and to trust that I can be in that place without letting go of the desire to keep fighting.
I think if we look at our lives like a kind of like an energetic system, the way of using our life force energy that's most in alignment with what we came here to do is also going to be the way of using it that's probably most sustainable. Meaning that whatever you're hardwired to do well, if you're like, fuck, I got to do more, that's not necessarily a bad impulse, but then it's like, how do you actually translate that into useful service that improves the world outside of your sense of duty, right? And I think that the answer is doing you even better. And so for me, I noticed that I like teaching. And so I'm like, all right, well, I got to set up situations where I'm doing that. When I'm doing that, it's like, all right, that's a moment well spent. And so whatever your passion is, I think pouring the, I got to do more into that, is one way to harness that energy that isn't going to burn you out or isn't going to come into conflict as much with what we're on purpose when we're doing what our soul's here to do. The kind of tired we end up with is a satisfied tired, usually. It's not depletion in the same way. You can hit depletion, but it's a kind of satisfied, satisfied tired. So, that's my thought, Jen, is like, is rededicate with, use that intensity to rededicate to your own path and purpose and awesomeness. Because I think that's what will be most effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
I would love to respond too, if that's possible. My name is Jennifer as well.
Go ahead, Jennifer, and then I'm going to see your question, Eden, as well.
It's just the comment spoke to something that resonated deeply within me. And, what I felt immediately is we all have this understanding that we're here to bear light, we're here to bring change, and, we are still very much human. So we take this ownership and responsibility, and you said, I should have done more. We have to kind of have the faith as we're on this path that we're doing exactly what we're supposed to do and that none of us were capable of precluding anything from happening because, even astrologically, there was so much change that's predicted. So, about 2 days after the election, I ended up on a call with some people in Washington, D.C. who were already, they were very much in the Clinton camp and they were already referring to President-elect Trump as President-elect and showing deference and doing this type of strategy work in terms of policy and movement. So, I think the understanding is that we've all called for change and the system had some things that needed to be exposed, whether we like it or not, that exposition is occurring right now. So our real strength is in how we respond, how we share light with others, how we bring them to peace, and how we can keep, the positive energy stirring towards progress and not just internalizing all of the negativity.
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer, for your perspective. One of the things that's important to speak to here is people are getting hit in many different ways by the results of the election. And it's very important, speaking a bit as a therapist, I suppose, to recognize the different ways that grief and loss can play out. Because for many, many people, there's a real sense of loss and betrayal is what I felt. Foreboding and real fear, legitimate fear, combined with a little bit of catastrophizing, but also some real legitimate fear about what's coming. And so it's important. I'm not saying you're doing this, Jennifer, but I see sometimes people will do a kind of reaction police or like kind of suggest how any given person ought to be feeling or processing things. And in this moment, at least, because there's plenty of work ahead, I'm a big fan of like making a ton of space for all the different ways that people are processing stuff and to feel the feelings. Because if not, they get stuck and we get annoying and neurotic as people. And not saying, again, I'm not pointing that toward you, Jennifer. I appreciate what you shared. And to underscore something I think I heard you saying, it certainly seems like a worse outcome to me than Clinton being elected, I think. And at the end of the day, I don't necessarily know how it will all look 20 years from now. I don't. And I don't think anyone has certainty on that. So there could be, it's possible that it could accelerate progressive change in some way. It's appealing to believe that. It may not be the case. But at the end of the day, for right now, it's like, stay with the feelings, I think, and be with the enormity of it. Thanks, Jennifer. Let me respond to Eden's question. Can you speak to the importance of self-forgiveness? Let me take you off. You're unmuted now, Eden. Is it similar to what Jennifer is speaking to around the I could have done more part?
Yeah, and also just the truth of what we can grant ourselves, we can more easily grant another.
Yeah, I think so, yes. The word that comes to mind, and it's one of the things that I have come to value probably more than anything, is kindness. And so what's the role here of kindness? Toward ourselves, toward even the people who didn't vote or voted in ways we don't appreciate, to not demean their humanity at the end of the day, while still calling out what needs called out, or kind of calling out is the right word, it can be, but still naming what needs corrected about damaging views and seeking to participate in correcting it. But self-forgiveness, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not very hard on myself, I guess, so I don't perseverate on that a lot. I don't think it's beneficial to be too hard on ourselves.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of ways to get stuck in a situation that has a real element of powerlessness and overwhelm to it, as national politics inevitably does. Mm-hmm. And I think if you allow that to consume your attention too much, there's going to be a disconnect from joy and rootedness where you're at. Mm-hmm. Some people, I think they maybe take it too far personally, but some people are like, oh, it's all game, it's all whatever, kind of dismissive of the real consequences of elections. But I understand also how it, like for me, there's a sense of I just tuned in for over a year to a presidential election, and I'm a little bit like, what the fuck is that? Like, what just, like, can I have that time back? That was very unsatisfying, like from start to finish, really. Mm-hmm. And so there's a part of me that realizes I got too pulled in a little. Mm-hmm. And if I have to forgive myself for something, it's for wasting my precious life, paying too much attention to it, which is a real thing.
Yep.
And so,
Yeah. In terms of what we can do to encourage and support one another, that feels like a really active practice that's vital in my community, mm-hmm. at least for me personally, that's a way that we can come around the what we didn't do that we feel like we should have in retrospect, or what we allowed ourselves to do that we wish we hadn't.
Yeah.
So it helps with the process of getting present. so that we can really listen, like you're saying, to the vitality that's driving us to do the thing that we're being asked to do.
Yeah, it's good. And it's also a moment, because he's not technically the president yet. It's right. A moment to like feel the feelings, take a breath, prepare, regroup, and remember what's precious about our lives and be even more loving. As tough of an ask as that is in some ways. Thanks, Eden. It's good. Thank you for perspective. I see Laura said, one thing I remind myself of my clients and communities that these types of principles are conceptually relatively simple, but a lot of work to implement, and they require constant maintenance and evolution. Yeah, I know. Well, I'm not saying I do all this stuff that I'm saying. I try at it. Thanks. No doubt. It's not super high tech, but are you actually recharging with the land? Like, are we actually taking good care of our hearts? Whatever it is. If you're going to get involved, are you being smart and strategic about it? So, yeah. I had a conversation. I hadn't intended to talk about this, but I had a conversation with like seven other cisgendered white guys. One guy was gay, but he's still, white guy. And the other day over beers, we were hanging out and we were totally talking all night about privilege and call it like really progressive good stuff. And I was like, wow, that's really heartening, because I'm kind of suspicious of other white guys. And I found that small group intimacy of really talking about things in a connective way was something I needed. And so having the conversations with trusted loved ones, to be like, how's this affecting you? How's it affecting you? How you doing? That's sacred. That's precious. And if you can hold a space for that, awesome. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Laura. So, anybody else have something you want to say or something you want to type in? I could, the only way to get people, I think, who are called in, which is a bunch of people, allowed to speak. I don't know if you have a way to take it off mute on your phone. Sweet. Yeah. Laura saying, having the opportunity to be of service to my community is the reason I'm not freaking out about this. Great. So that's a great principle in general. It's like, find your way to contribute, to give back, etc. So, yeah. Let me temporarily make chaos and take everybody off mute. So stop doing crazy things, and I'm going to take you off mute. And then if you're on the telephone, you want to say something, speak up, and then I'll put everybody else on mute. Anybody else there got something you want to say? Oh, okay. Chaos. Putting everybody back on mute. Whoa, that didn't work that well. Has anybody else got anything, basically? Trying to make space for people to chime in. What's helping you? Seriously, because other people may listen to this recording and find some benefit from it. Allison, yeah? Is that okay? Go ahead, Allison, yeah.
Yeah, so big freak out. I saw it coming that night on election night. Went through the 37 stages of grief overnight, listened to all the comments, went to sleep. The next morning, I actually feel really energized. I am horrified that Trump won, let me just say, like, just so people know. But I feel very energized. I'm keeping a log of what makes sense to me about what I hear people talking about like what happened and how people are processing it. I think it's now like 50 pages long, and I've got links copied, reading a lot of news, a lot of blogs coming in. Some of it I'm not interested. A lot of it's really interesting. So that's my way of like processing. I'm still processing it. Like what happened? And then finding my own voice growing, amongst cacophony. I don't know, all the other opinions about what happened. I don't know if it's helpful.
It is.
I'm loving the New York Times. I got to say, I never thought I would subscribe to the New York Times, but it's really interesting, great writing. Anyway, it's really good for my heart and my soul. And
I want to believe I notice in myself, I don't hang out a lot in denial, but I've actually noticed moments where it's like I'm still periodically in denial that this is happening. I'm like, wow, interesting to catch that. Damn. And I want to believe that this is bringing to the surface more efficiently than a Clinton presidency would have. Mm-hmm. The shadow, underbelly, intergenerational toxins of racism, sexism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, and I think whether or not it functions in that uncomfortably therapeutic, accelerated way will depend on how we handle it and how it plays out. I don't think it's a given, but I want to believe that it's going to be a more efficient way to actually heal some stuff up, but fuck, it's rough already. Yeah. Let me thank you, Allison. Yeah. Cheers on honoring your own rhythm and process with it. I'm going to find Mr. David Christie and take him off mute if I can. There you are, Dave. Oh, you're already off mute, I think. Okay. Thanks, Kai. Yeah, go ahead.
So the thing that's actually been really helpful is in the kind of catastrophizing and the gloom that was like really there for me, to take it seriously and at the same time to kind of stop the spin. And the way for that was to go back to the kind of Buddhist idea of just like how precious this moment is and like the fragility of it. So without catastrophizing about how it's all going to go to shit, but to recognize that it is fragile and precious and that it's amazing that I'm here, that I have, you know, my wife and partner and work that I love, and I could be hit by a bus tomorrow. And that level of not taking it for granted and that level of gratitude has stopped some of that spin, stopped some of the catastrophizing, because it's like, all right, I can't take this for granted, and I can tune in to what's really important in, you know, the work that I'm doing in school with my clients and all of that kind of stuff. But in seeing the fragility as being a part of what is magic and sacred, and seeing the shortness of it all.
Yeah.
Shortness of my life, of how little is guaranteed. And from that perspective, it helps me be a little bit less jaded, a little bit less flinty, because I want to add to that sweetness for other people a little bit more. And so it doesn't necessarily help with hope. It's still kind of a bleak world, but it keeps me from being quite as grouchy as I can sometimes be.
Yeah.
And this is only something that, like, for me, you know, is kind of coming in the last, you know, 4 days is when I've been kind of like waking up out of that kind of grouchy, awful place.
I mean, part of what I hear, thanks, Dave, is that at the end of the day, no matter what the state of politics are, we're still responsible for our own consciousness. If we want to be grown-ups, if we want to be grown as people, we're still responsible for how we show up. And if we bring our grouchy negativity, like my mom was complaining about how negative my dad is about everything now. He was a big Bernie supporter, and now he's just like, hard to live with. I'm like, sorry. He hasn't done a lot of inner work, bless his heart. And geez, I'm going to put this in my newsletter. Sorry, Dad. And but it's a thing about knowing that our service in the world is also, are we being good to the people close to us? Are we being soft and kind when we need to? That's one of the shadow aspects of warriorship, is when we hang out and like when we're sitting at home being Facebook warriors, picking fights on social media, and then we're in warrior mode and we go, you know, bring that to the dinner table. It kind of sucks for the people around us. And so there's the thing about knowing how to be sweet when it's sweetness time and to be good to each other. So I think that's a lot of what is going to be important to get us through, because so far as I can tell, it's just getting started. It's going to get kind of live, I think. So, well, here we are. I see Shauna saying what's helping you the most is staying grounded in a feeling of vulnerability and being open to feelings of others around you, and things are getting brought to light. Yeah. And things are easier to see and name now. And yeah, I do see it. I see it like that too. I hope it's like that. I certainly think that it's a time when more people are being invited into the dialogue. Like the millions and millions of people that voted for Trump, almost all of them are smart enough to know that the people that didn't vote for Trump see them as racists. And that's interesting. That's a kind of "you're a racist" dialogue. That it's not that that's the most heartwarming opener for a conversation, but my wife texted me. She's like, "I just called my mom a racist at dinner." I'm like, "Oh, babe, I don't know if that's the opener, but sorry, shouldn't say that on the call." So it makes for some live conversations, but it means that people are thinking about it a bit more. That when I say people, I especially mean white people, because it's not like people of color haven't been totally fucking thinking about it for a couple centuries. So as tedious as it is for people that are already tapped in, I do see some benefit to more people becoming aware. I want to believe that. I think it can play out that way potentially. So we're at time here. Just a senior comment, Isabel, that give yourself to totally grieve for a few weeks and feeling like you're resurfacing and getting some balanced warriorship online. So yeah, good. That's another thing. Let me say it. It's like, one thing we suck at culturally is appreciating cycles. And what I mean by that is balance is not like this. It's like, it's always moving. So if you spend a couple weeks where you're just like, "I am an emotional slug. I can't get out of bed. I'm just like in all the feelings all the time." Well, what if you just had those few weeks, knowing that you're not going to be in that? If you're in that space for 3 months, then, you know, throw out a lifeline. But let yourself go through cycles with things. It's okay. You don't have to look the same all the time. If you're super intense for a week, then you pull back and you recharge or whatever it is. Like, so allow for the cyclic movement, because we need to dig in, not just for this lifetime, but for at least the next few hundred years. It's going to take at least a few hundred years to get this sorted. It's bigger than the Trump presidency, obviously. It's about the ecological catastrophe we're playing out on the planet, not to mention all the human shit that we don't seem to be able to figure out too well with one another. So it's going to take a few centuries. It's neither good nor bad. It's just the condition we're in. But it means sustainability is really important. So you figure out what your jam is, what you need to be doing, and figure out how to do that like a boss and really take care of it. And so, great. Thanks, everybody, for your time, for your attention. I'm going to actually be teaching to this kind of material this Saturday in Asheville, North Carolina, in Athens, Georgia, in February, for a weekend in Berkeley for a day in March 18th, coming out before the ancestor training for a day, and for a day teaching. And then I might do a retreat in Asheville in August. It's all around social justice stuff. So that's where my work's headed. If you want to log into that and you're not already in the loop, I send out a monthly newsletter. Just send me an email, and that would be the way to be in the loop about things. But otherwise, keep reaching out. I do a lot of session work and appreciate you all taking the time and the trust and consideration. So thanks, everybody. Yeah. Be steady. Dig in. Yeah. Cheers. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording.